So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
Getting predictable trip in here. Oh, wait a minute.
It's time for another edition of Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting coming at you from the Review Away studios. Wei, how are things?
Doing well. What's new with you? How's your life?
Life is good. Life is busy. Very strange edition of Raw this past Monday night.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean. I thought it was pretty average and standard. Nothing surprises me anymore. Is what I'm trying to say.
You didn't seem that into Raw when we talked about it on Monday night, though.
Well, I changed my mind very quickly.
Oh, you made a turnaround.
Yeah.
You really like that angle.
I'm just thinking about it, and I'm just thinking, shit.
I judged before fully thinking of the ramifications.
That's why it's we should always wait 2 days before really assessing our opinions.
Are you saying we should introduce a new show called Review a Review a Raw?
Absolutely.
Review our own review show.
I think so. We could do one every other day. Review a Review a Review a Raw.
As we talk about future reviews, Wei, there's a giant video that's just staring us in the face for a future review, and that is Queen of the Ring starring China.
We've talked about this in the past. It is the Royal Rumble style porno.
Featuring a 9-wrestler gangbang, according to the DVD cover.
Well, that's misleading. A Royal Rumble, everybody knows, should be 30, if not 40 people.
I'm surprised they didn't go for the authentic number.
Are there going to be intervals? Will they do 90 seconds or 60?
Well, there was that 1 year in 95 where it was, you know, the roster was really, really thin, so they shaved the time down. And not to say there won't be any shaving involved in this video, but I would think that with less people involved, perhaps they would make longer intervals to get longer scenes and prolong the video.
I imagine these guys will be working for more than 90 seconds at a time.
Not a bad day of work if, a Ron Jeremy can get a payday for 90 seconds.
Yeah, but have you seen China lately?
I saw her at the TNA pay-per-view last year, and I've seen her passing out in California.
She just looks mess.
Is this video her official excommunication from ever being touched by a prominent wrestling company again? Because I don't think WWE will ever touch this woman again. Even a month ago, we were saying maybe they will bring her in for the DX reunion. But this is it. She's done.
I don't see how this is anything worse. I mean, it's worse. But it's like she's done anal videos. I'd say that the line was drawn probably at that point.
Is it not strange? Like, it's one thing to do porn. It's another to do a porn parody involving your ex-boyfriend and his current wife.
Oh, is Stephanie going to be
portrayed in this as all, along with Vince. If we get a Vince-Stephanie scene.
Jesus. Well, everybody was kind of hoping for in that Hogan Knows Best thing, a scene between Brooke and, but even that, I don't know, incest isn't really touched on, even in porn, I guess.
Now there's,
or is it? Yeah, there's plenty of incest.
Everything is done in porn, eventually.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to leave it to the listeners to post on this thread if you want us to review this in the future or not.
Oh, I already see the response.
I just want to see what people's reactions are. We did get some people who did not care for us reviewing the Hogan Knows Best parody, but I thought for the sake of what we do, it had to be done. And that was a terrible porno.
Are you looking for an excuse to justify watching this,
no,
John?
No, I'm not.
Because
I'm not
there's no problem
excuse.
If you're curious.
I'm very curious to watch this one because of the wrestling tie-in, because they're going so heavy after it.
I have never seen a China porn movie, not even that X-Pac sex tape, and I don't know. I'm not exactly looking forward to
what about the She-Hulk parody she's going to do? You're a comic book fan. Does that not get your interest?
No, I really can't say so.
But
if we're doing a review for it, I certainly I will watch anything if people care.
On the Vivid website right now, the parodies are big right now. They've got the Dark Knight XXX. Mm-hmm. They've got a Spider-Man parody, and one of the things on their site now is that where was it? They had a link. Where now, if you have a celebrity sex tape, there is now a direct section where you can contact Vivid with a tip about a celebrity sex tape. This is clearly the direction they're going after the success here of Kim Kardashian, superstar.
I think that's amazing. So if you happen to find a celebrity sex tape, don't...
Here it is. Have a celeb sex tape. Click the link below and submit your information. If we think you have the goods, a representative will contact you.
Yeah, I don't get
how many false leads must they get on a daily basis from people?
Even those make money, I'm sure. But I like the lookalikes, I mean. But isn't that fucked? If it's like if you happen to find or if you happen to hack somebody's phone and dig up a sex tape, it's like they're saying you have every right to broadcast it.
Throughout her amazing pro wrestling career, China was never shy about her opinions. In Queen of the Ring, she lets loose in this hardcore movie that parodies such icons in the sport as Triple H, Hulk Hogan, blah, blah, blah.
Well, when is this?
Next week.
Oh, wow.
This movie made me feel sexy and wanted, said China. I was glad it was a long shoot because it was totally turning me on and having so much fun laughing a lot with the guys. I think adult movie fans will go crazy over it. I used to dream about being a movie star. I didn't expect to be making adult movies because I felt insecure compared to all the beautiful women in the industry. Vivid has given me a life-changing opportunity to be glamorous and sensual, and I'm delighted with it. I want my fans to know that I'm better than ever. I've been wanting to make this particular parody for a long time. Of course, I know every player who was parodied, and it was great to spar with them again. But this time, it was really hot on my new sexual turf. Featuring Lisa Ann, Valerie Kay, Ron Jeremy, Anthony Hardwood, Cyrus King, Evan Stone, Marcos Banderas, and guess the name of the actor playing The Rock, Sledgehammer, and TJ Cummings as John Cena, and Tommy Pistol as Gene Okerlund.
They actually use the wrestlers' names?
They're playing these characters. It says here, disclaimer, the parody movie is not sponsored, endorsed by, or approved by World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated, the performers parodied in the movie, or any person or entity associated with any of them.
Yeah, I guess they operate under the same parody laws as, SNL.
That's amazing.
Well, thank goodness for parody laws.
It's not like you're really damaging anyone who can't distinguish.
Hold on a second, though. But anybody, the WWE is notorious for going after people for infringing on gimmicks and doing.
Oh, I don't doubt we might get some lawsuit here. But Vivid is a big player. You know what I mean? Like, Vivid does not release a movie like this without having everything covered.
Right.
Pardon the pun.
Well, they called it, they made a Dark Knight XXX, If they can take on all these companies, I don't see how WWE can. Yeah. Are you concerned at all, though, that we're doing this here at work?
Doing what at work? A podcast?
No, doing a porno review. Does that ever concern you?
No, I think it's news. I think it's obviously a wrestling parody. Let's throw it around the other way. Who would be a good example? If Dana White was involved in a sex tape scandal.
Yeah.
As a reporter, would you not have to watch this to report on what is being alleged in the video?
Well, yes. I mean,
I think because it's wrestling,
I don't know if you have to watch it. I mean, you probably take.
What
take
if there's
that a,
inside the video, Dana is.
See, but we're gonna get into. very graphic detail about what we're watching. Is that news?
Well, that is why we have in our back pocket the analysis of Jason Agnew to join us to review such a thing, because Jay has a better handle on this, I feel.
Right, the analyst.
The analyst. He joined us on the Brooke Know, or Hogan Knows Best. The parody.
Oh, that was an awkward...
Is this what you envisioned?
That was
doing?
An awkward conversation. That was an awkward review. This one, if we do it, it's going to be even worse.
I think it'd be... It has the potential to be hilarious.
Yeah, it does.
Have you really seen any porn parodies before?
Just that Hulk Hogan one.
Yeah.
Really?
I saw a Third Rock from the... No.
A Third Rock from the...
No. That 70s show porn parody.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. And how was that?
The actors and actresses, they actually, like, they found, like, a dead ringer for, like, Kelso.
Did they do, like, a scene with, like, you know, the pot table with the camera, the first person scene?
Yes, they did.
And this was, like...
Dude, they had, like, a replica of the kitchen.
Yeah.
It was so good.
But I mean a sex scene, you with that camera.
To be honest, when I say I watched it, I watched 10 minutes of it. It was on like one night. I was flipping through and I thought Third Rock from the Sun was on, but it had the XXX thing. I'm like, oh my God, it's a parody of this.
Where do you see pornos when you're flipping through channels?
It was somewhere in the 200s. It's right above where like HBO is for us. Like in the 300s. Like there's some porn
TMN
channel
TMN probably.
There.
TMN or something.
It wasn't TMN, but it was near there, yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway, I think it's MXS.
Yeah, that's TMN.
Is that owned by
TMN? That's one of the.
Okay, that's why it's grouped there. Yeah, so that would have been.
They're porno on TMN.
So I don't know if they did that or not, but.
Interesting.
The 10 minutes I saw, I thought they did a good job, very faithful to the original.
You know, it would be great if we could track down somebody to interview for this.
Buddy, I'm way ahead.
Wow.
I am attempting.
Oh, my God.
I think we should get someone. If not China, we should certainly try and get Sledgehammer on the show.
Wow, that's brilliant.
How do you play The Rock? And did you ever consider a different name?
Yes, behind the actor's studio with the porn actor's studio, I suppose. I can't wait.
Porn doesn't have to be this dredge of society.
I think it's absolutely
it's a form of entertainment that has an audience.
Absolutely, I think there's a need for it.
In fact, by us laughing at it, I think that there's a bit of a double standard because I think wrestling to non-wrestling fans is treated the same way.
I agree.
And people are offended.
I don't disagree with that. Absolutely,
porn is meant to be ridiculous.
It is.
To a degree.
Absolutely. And you know,
like, at least porn parodies.
The thing with all these, nobody takes them so seriously. The impressions are usually terrible. And it's just really a backdrop to want to sell people having sex on film. They do, like, you know, they film these basically in one weekend. The budget for these is not big at all. So it's going to be some really good trashy TV, yep. I'd say.
So there we go. Maybe a future review. But today's review is going back to September of 2006, right here in Toronto, Ontario, at the Air Canada Centre for Unforgiven 2006. I believe this was the most voted upon WWE event people on the Law message board wanted to see. And by the way, I want to give a special shout out to Louis on the message board, who has compiled all these stats. Every time you post something about a show you want reviewed,
no matter how insignificant, like
if in passing you say, "I'd love to hear a Road Wild review of,"
if you want to hear something like a Just Incredible U Shoot.
He has compiled every single request, put them into a manageable list, and that is our go-to for weeks when we are lost on something to review. So a big thank you for him doing all that work, compiling them. It was a big help here, and it is the reason we are reviewing Unforgiven 2006 today.
He's giving the people power.
People power.
Yeah.
Message board power.
That's right.
Still to come as well on the show, we are going to hear from our show that night. We're going to hear Jason Agnew's live report because he attended the show and then came in to do the Law right afterwards. And from Trish Stratus, who joined us about 90 minutes after her match live on the Law. Awesome. So that was really cool. I remember that night having her on live. So we will hear Trish Stratus's first interview post WWE discussing Unforgiven. And Wei, this was an event you watched way back. Do you recall call this event? Because no. For me, I remember watching it back at CFRB before we had to go on the air. Myself and Mouth, we did not watch the show live. Only Jay went to the show. But this, a bit of a hidden gem, I think, in WWE's past 6 years of pay-per-views.
I agree. I was there with you, but no, I don't remember this at all. Yeah, I don't remember anything from this show.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's why we go back and rewatch stuff. Because yeah. We, you know, you watch something and then you just filter it out. It's like going to the bathroom after eating.
Yeah.
When you watch a paper.
I was going to say it's like an exam where you just cram and cram and then just forget. But sure. It's like what you said, too.
This was the first time a WWE pay-per-view, and if might be the only time as well, we had a TLC match and a Hell in a Cell match together on one pay-per-view. I mean, these were Hell in a Cell, especially back in 2006, was something that did very well on pay-per-view. TLC matches, we hadn't really seen a pay-per-view built around one before, but it was still a very big standout gimmick for the company. And putting those two together, they were certainly trying to load this up. And then I found in the week leading up to the show, Trish Stratus's retirement got a lot of buzz as well. Something cool for the live crowd in Toronto.
How early did they announce that retirement before this event?
I think it was pretty well known in the summer that she would be leaving soon. It was just a question as to when. And then it was announced probably about like 3 weeks or so before the show that this would be her retirement match at Unforgiven, challenging Lita for the women's title. So a bit of... bit of a kind of role reversal here. The person going out is challenging for a title on her last night.
Yeah, well, if you see the finish, it absolutely makes sense.
So here we go. September the 17th, 2006. One thing I remember most about this event, Way, is that that weekend, I went to go interview Jeff Hardy and Candice Michelle in town. They were doing an autograph signing. I went to go interview them, did my interviews with them. I can't remember where it was. It was at Best Buy on... at Young and Dundas. And I did my interviews, thought they went really well. Jeff Hardy was telling me about wanting to be in a future WWE Studios release.
Oh.
Which never happened.
No, not yet.
So I leave, thinking the interviews went well, and on my way home, I'm listening back. I'm like, oh, shit. And I'm playing it, and there's nothing. No sound, nothing. And I fast forward, and I fast forward. It is silence, just silence for 20 minutes. And I'm just panicking here. I was like, I was supposed to have these interviews done. I contact the WWE person and went right to her voicemail. And I was like, I'm going to sound like a total idiot right now, but I don't think I recorded the two interviews. Is there any way I can get 5 minutes with each of them to redo these really quickly? Very sorry about this. And I'm waiting. I'm all worried. I turn around to go back to the Best Buy, and then as I'm listening back, I realized the volume was on zero. And I turned the volume up, and there we had 20 minutes worth of interviews, and my heart returned to its rightful place. I replied back to the WWE person. I said, I'm even more of an idiot now because I do have the interviews, just trying to learn the volume here on my mini disc. And I went back. I remember going back to my... I lived with roommates at the time, and I had a bunch of friends over and stuff, and I was just, like, so depressed for the first 20 minutes till I finally realized I had these interviews. And that was that.
Well, technology has always been your friend, John.
No, it has not. I know you say that sarcastically. That was never. The two of us do not get along well together, but we coexist.
Yeah, the volume button is a tricky thing.
Hey, it's a... it's happened to the best of us. In all the interviews I've done, I can say I've only lost one interview, and that was an interview I did with Randy Orton in 2005, where it did not record properly, and I lost the Randy Orton interview, complete with a liner.
You checked
that's one liner that eludes me. Yeah, the volume was on. The volume was on. Okay. It did not save on the mini disc. So there we go. Have you ever had a technical problem shooting anything, like where you've lost something altogether that's not salvageable?
Absolutely. I'm positive that I have. It's been a while though, luckily. So I still have issues all the time with like back focus and things like that. But, I try to avoid it as best as I could. Audio issues. And sometimes you prepare so much and something that you didn't expect to happen will happen, but you know.
I told the story about how I had to redo an interview with Kane once and how I was always indebted to that guy for being willing to listen to my questions a second time. And then a few weeks ago, it happened to me as well, where I had to, I did another interview. This was just an MMA interview, and it didn't record properly, and I had to redo the interview again with the guy.
Yeah.
Shitty stuff that happens.
No, it sucks.
All right, let's get into this.
You and I have had to re-record many things.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, you and me have actually, well, I guess just the law of averages. You and I have recorded so much, but we've had a pretty good string.
Yeah, thus far.
We've had a pretty good
Let's not jinx ourselves. We haven't hit stop yet on this.
Well, this is amazing. That I will always remember that. Unforgiven 99, where we did that podcast three times.
Jeez.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Where I think after the second time it fucked up, you and I were just like beyond comprehension that we just laughed. It's like,
no, I wasn't laughing.
Oh, maybe I was.
I wasn't laughing at all. We had to come in the next morning. This was a Saturday morning when we had to come in just to do this. Unbelievable.
The lengths we have gone to.
Yeah.
All right. Unforgiven. It kicked off with a video on the two matches for tonight. We've got, the two big matches. The big feud at the time was the McMahons against DX. DX had just been reformed a couple of months earlier, and I could not stand DX during this time. They took up so much time. There was some of the lamest comedy at the time, and it was all building up to this match. We got a tag match between the McMahons and DX at SummerSlam. This was where the I Love Cox shirt came out of. This was a dreadful period. I couldn't stand DX.
Yeah, Vince loves cock.
Vince loves cock. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this was a very different DX from what we saw back in the late 90s. This was a very watered down. This was like two 40-year-olds trying to act like Dennis the Menace and Vince McMahon being Mr. Wilson, I guess.
That's a great comparison. That's what it was. It was not cutting edge. It was not anything other than, to me, just aggravating. But nonetheless, some of the antics here we saw in the video was them defacing what was identified as his $30 million plane and other hijinks. And then the setup for the main event with Edge and John Cena, where if John Cena lost, he would leave for SmackDown. At least a more believable stipulation than loser leaves WWE.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Although, at this point, I wouldn't buy that. John Cena going to SmackDown.
Today, no. And probably at that point, no either. Yeah. I mean, Raw was, still the flagship. The theme song way was Run by Day of Fire.
Never heard of this band.
I heard plenty of it over the 3 hours of this pay-per-view, though. This was a terrible song.
Are you surprised?
I guess not. I want something just jarring one day, like some crazy, like, screamo ballad that they can play that just is so out there by WWE standards.
Like STEM, like a UFC theme, you mean? Not that that's screamo, but...
Wouldn't it be great if they got, like, I don't know, some... who knows?
What?
Who would you like Euro? To hear as a theme song?
Who would I like to hear?
What would be a group song? You would love to hear?
Oh, the Wu-Tang Clan. Absolutely.
John Cena ain't no one to fuck with.
Yes.
Maybe. Maybe RZA's going to be the social media ambassador when the movie comes out.
Batista is the star of the movie.
That would make a lot of sense for a tie-in. Have Kung Lee come in?
I'd love to see. You know what would be awesome is if they did like an Aces and Eights angle and it was all like Wu-Tang members. Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Are they all still...
Or the No Limit Soldiers, because
that went over so well.
Yeah.
You never know. Maybe Kung Lee could come in one week and then, like, second Sakamoto and Tensai.
Yes. Yeah. And then he'll get beaten up by Tensai every week.
And it leads to a Kung Lee-Tensai match.
Yeah.
In Macau for the UFC on Fuel 6 event.
Okay. That's too much of a...
We upset a lot of people on Impact last week with our MMA chat at the beginning of the show.
Did we? How many?
Probably one or two comments.
Oh, okay.
That to me is a lot.
Yeah. We, okay. Well.
I think some people have to realize what this podcast is.
Hold on a second, though. That was the day of the John Jones
fiasco. I know.
Fiasco.
I know. I'm not saying what we did was wrong.
That was the biggest story in combat sports that day. There's nothing else that matches it. It's still a story that everybody's talking about today. So
we talk about wrestling, we talk about MMA, and we talk a lot about sleep patterns. So folks, if you don't like it, there's lots of other shows out there for you.
No, there isn't. This is the only show. So just, you know, bear with it.
Deal with it. Anyway, Day of Fire.
Or just fast forward.
This was a Raw-only pay-per-view, eh? This was still when we had the brand-specific shows. This was at the tail end of them before they were going to start combining SmackDown and Raw talent on the shows. But at this point, I mean, this was a, you know, pretty decent Raw roster at the time in terms of, you know, up and down this card. I think this show was a bit of an anomaly at the time. I don't remember Raw being super hot at this time, but this was a pay-per-view that featured a lot of strong stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Announcers were Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, and we kicked things off with Johnny Nitro, who throughout my notes, I kept going back and forth between Nitro and Morrison when writing down stuff here. He's really shed that Nitro moniker. As Jim Ross called him in this match, Johnny, don't call me Monday Nitro.
Huh. Yeah.
Defending the Intercontinental title against Jeff Harvey. And
Jeff Harvey?
Jeff Harvey.
Okay.
Yep. Nitro here was the heel, so when he comes out with Melina, his heel entrance is that when Melina spreads her legs, he covers her vagina with his face.
Oh.
Did you see that? He puts his head in her crotch when she enters the ring.
Oh, okay.
So that you cannot see her panties.
No, I did not. I didn't notice that, but that makes sense. Yeah. He should have been doing that backstage as well.
It would have warded off
onlookers. Mm-hmm.
Hardy had just returned here to the WWE a couple of weeks prior, and Jim Ross cites a mysterious 3-year absence from the WWE. I don't think it was so mysterious, considering it was Jim Ross who released him in 2003 when he wouldn't go to rehab. So, Jeff Hardy returning here. This was after his less than spectacular first run with TNA, where he missed shows, he was late, did not have a good track record in TNA, and that was enough convincing for the WWE to give him a second shot. Like, all right, this guy is just completely pissed off TNA to the point TNA doesn't want to use him. Let's bring him back.
And apparently that was enough to, well, like he would mess up here, and then TNA took him back afterwards.
Yep. Crowd was chanting Nitro sucks very loudly, which was a chant that many people had in the year 2000 as well. Melina was doing her crazy scream at this point. For the sake of her vocal cords, I'm glad this gimmick did not continue for too long.
Yeah.
This sounded just completely painful to do every single match.
Yeah.
She screamed like some wild animal.
Well, it's the Daphne gimmick, isn't it?
Yeah, but this was like, I don't know, taking it to a different level, in my opinion.
I was never a huge fan. It was just more annoying than anything.
Johnny Nitro, and he will admit this, his promo skills have always been kind of the weakest part of his presentation, and he got into it with a fan here who booed him, and his comeback here to some fan insulting him was like the most monotone response. He said, "What? You shut up."
Yeah, he looks great. He's a great in-ring performer. But
you look at this guy and it's like, man, how is this guy not ascended to, as a top-level performer? And it's so evident when he opens his mouth.
Yeah. The thing is, though, like, you know, in interviews, and like the interview you did with him right before he was released, I thought he was really good and he was pretty comfortable. It's just about translating that into a character and translating it into comfort.
He's someone to me that he's trying to fit into a personality rather than just being his own personality.
Right.
I mean, I found when I talked to him off air, it was just, you know, just casual guy. I found him really interesting even during the interview when he was much more relaxed. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to worry about rehearsing lines and memorizing. I mean, that is not designed for this guy. Yeah. And there's some people who should be scripted for it. And there's others who it's way too forceful. And he, to me, is one of those guys.
Maybe he's a guy that in a previous era would have had much more success in front of a microphone.
Great example is Jeff Hardy. Never been a great promo. So you know what? They don't give him long monologues to go out there and recite.
Yeah.
And he's really over. Hardy started off, hit a seated dropkick off the second rope, teased a swanton, but Nitro goes to the floor where Hardy baseball slid to the floor and then came off the barricade with a clothesline. Ross mentions that Melina was nearly sandwiched, which would be an image that would excite Jerry Lawler.
Yep.
Different era 6 years ago, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Very different. Have you heard this new ruling that for the new Saturday morning slam show, which apparently we do get in Canada, Mouth watched it over the weekend, and he really enjoyed it. It's a half hour.
What channel? What network?
It's on some of the Mouth said he gets it on three different channels.
Oh, okay.
Like it's on CW in the States, and we get probably the Buffalo affiliate.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the rules is during the matches, you are not allowed any holds or maneuvers aimed at the neck.
Is that right?
Because it's kids programming.
Wow.
So I don't think Daniel Bryan could use the no lock on Saturday Morning Slam.
Is that something that attacks the neck? It's a cross face.
But you're kind of stretching the neck. Okay, like a rear chin lock or a sleeper.
How about a choke slam?
I don't think you could do that.
Wow.
By their language, any maneuver or submission attacking the neck is barred.
Interesting.
Really weird, eh?
Yeah, these are very silly overreactions, I'd say. Come on.
Yeah. I do want to watch it, though. Mouth said it's like it really goes by fast. They got a lot of comedic features. But one big negative was that they taped it 2 weeks ago, so your commentators are Josh Matthews and Santino Marella wearing his United States title.
Because
it was taped the Tuesday going into SummerSlam, which means they probably were not planning to take the title off of Santino at that point.
Maybe not.
That's how much plans change for the YouTube pre-show during the week. Nitro cuts off Hardy and works over his left leg for the next couple of minutes as Hardy tries to get up and then is clipped back down. Nitro goes for a corkscrew moonsault off the top, misses Hardy, and then Hardy keeps Nitro away with a bunch of elbows, hits the whisper in the wind, gets a two count. Then Hardy blocks a top rope Hurricane Rana, hits the Swanton, but Morrison gets his foot on the ropes, crowd really getting into the match towards the end. Nitro then counters the Twist of Fate, tries for a heel hook here. Hardy then kicks Morrison into the ropes where Molina's knocked off the apron, goes for a schoolboy. Morrison kicks out. You see, I've delved into Morrison already. And then the finish comes with Nitro coming off the top. Hardy hits him with the powerbomb, but then Molina takes her boot off, clocks Hardy with the boot, and Nitro pins him. 17 minutes and 38 seconds to kick off this pay-per-view. I thought a really good opener. A bit of a cheap finish here that continues the feud, I guess. But a really good match from these two.
I thought it was excellent. I thought they were given a lot of time for this. I thought their high-flying styles meshed well together. And the near falls were very well worked. My only complaint is that I didn't think Hardy, after being, you know, having his leg being attacked for all that time, should have been going for his high-flying stuff afterwards. I didn't think he was really selling it too much. But overall, a tremendous opener from these two.
And at a time when both were kind of, you know, just trying to find their spot, at that point, Morrison as a singles wrestler, Hardy who had just come back. So, good outing for both. Helped them both, I thought.
And talk about, you know, the fall of the IC title between this and now.
Yes. Now belonging to The Miz? Miz has it.
Oh, yes.
I only go by the linear championship from now on.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which belongs to Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, okay, well, it's not in such bad shape then.
Then we got a feature on The Marine starring John Cena and Robert Patrick where a lot of stuff exploded.
Hmm.
And this was a moneymaker for the company. Oh. One of the few successes in WWE Studios history.
Enough to spawn two sequels.
Yeah. The Marine Homefront. Mm-hmm. Starring The Miz.
Oh, that's right.
Wow. I don't want to watch that one. They show General Manager Teddy Long in a private box at the Air Canada Center as he is scouting the main event to see if he will be getting John Cena. Cheering for John Cena to lose is what Teddy Long was sent here to do. Then we have a run-in in the back between Matt and Jeff Hardy, which I would have to guess was their first on-screen meeting since Jeff came back, because Matt was a SmackDown talent at this point and Jeff on Raw. And Matt tells Jeff that he's proud of him. And then who should walk in but Lita, mocking both of them, says that Jeff would be a champion if he wasn't such a screw-up. While Matt would simply never be a champion, and says that Matt can face John Cena on SmackDown when Edge beats him. Lita was great here.
She was okay, yeah.
No, you thought she was horrible.
I don't know.
I liked her as a heel.
Yeah, no, I think she's fine. I just never thought she was that great of an actress. If anything, I thought the real-life ramifications were what added to the whole thing. How uncomfortable would this be to work with your ex and working on basically...
Not as uncomfortable as it would be doing a porn parody with your ex being a character in the
right.
movie. That would be more awkward than this.
No, there aren't many things more awkward than what you just described. But this I would say comes pretty close to work on an angle based on your real life drama.
You know what though? In the long term, though, you can say that angle didn't do a whole lot for Matt Hardy. It did get him a bit of a, you know, a hot feud with Edge that ultimately really benefited Edge, mm-hmm. and to a lesser extent Lita. And you know what? Sometimes pro wrestling is that weird gray area that meshes fiction with reality. And sometimes if two people are willing to put aside personal differences to make money, you can get great stuff.
That's
and
what I'm
with
trying,
Edge, that made his career.
That's what I'm trying to say. These guys must have had some type of great reconciliation counseling in order to be able to do this.
And now they're all friends.
Yeah.
They got over things.
Well, good stuff.
Which is a life lesson. To bury grudges, mm-hmm. no matter how severe the wound. Something
wow.
we can all live by,
that's
the way.
That's deep.
Something, that's a life lesson. Umaga, making his WWE pay-per-view debut. I was upset. I thought this was the Kane fake Kane match, which maybe that took place on a Raw. I think it took place on a Raw right around this time. It was Umaga against Kane, and Umaga comes out with his manager, Armando Alejandro Estrada, who did this promo calling the people big red dummies in preparation for this match. No surprise here that Armando quickly got over here, as crowd just loved this guy. I really miss him to this day as the last really prominent, you know, young manager. We've seen Paul Heyman come back, but Estrada was a guy that I just thought he was just such a great throwback and so helpful here to Umaga during this run.
Sure, sure.
This was a match, actually, at the time, a lot of people were dreading, because Umaga kind of got lumped into that big man can't really work style. And Jesus Christ, did people do a stark turn after Umaga's series of matches with Cena. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Umaga could really go for a guy his size. He turned out to be a huge asset to that company in 2007.
Well, I don't think he exactly lit the world on fire during his time with Rosie.
3 minute warning. Yeah.
And I think we're all just kind of expecting something like that. But this gimmick, I think, really helped to branch him out into like a... And the way they booked him, too.
Make him that monster. Yeah, and he was undefeated going into this. And Ross basically, right at the start, warns everyone this match may suck. And man, did Jim Ross have every Unforgiven statistic under the sun here, noting that Kane has been in 8 of 9 Unforgiven events. He would have way more later in the show.
That's impressive.
Umaga beats down on Kane on the floor, hits a running diving headbutt back in the ring, and then Kane comes back and clotheslines him into the crowd, and they fight to a double count out at 3 minutes and 36 seconds. They fight towards the entrance. Crowd completely shit on this finish.
Yeah.
At least they didn't waste your time. It's not like we got 15 minutes of these two and then a double count. They got it over with quickly and painless.
This wasn't a terrible brawl. This crowd actually seemed really hot for this, as they were throughout the entire
I just
evening.
Think it was the finish they hated with the double count out. That's going to get a negative
the
reaction.
The finish was terrible, but whatever. Nobody came to watch this. But yes.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe there was
somebody. You think somebody paid?
The Canaanites.
Okay. Oh, well,
the worst
sorry.
Name for a fan following in wrestling history.
Mm-hmm.
Vince and Shane are watching back in their locker room their beatdown of Triple H from the Raw that prior Monday, with Vince using a sledgehammer and then pinning Triple H on Raw. This is a great example way that I want to bring up. A lot of people will talk about, you know, the difference between beating someone on pay-per-view as opposed to beating someone on Raw the next night, because more people are going to see Raw than a pay-per-view. And I guarantee you, no one, including myself, ever remembers Vince McMahon pinning Triple H on an edition of Raw. People just remember pay-per-views much more clear. There's less of them to remember. They're built up for longer. There's more importance placed on them. And you remember moments on pay-per-view a lot less, I think, than you do 52 weeks of Raw every week.
You mean a lot more?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whatever I said. Whatever you mean is what I meant.
Yeah, well, how many pay-per-view moments do you... Did you remember this pay-per-view moment?
I'm saying I remember that Hell in a Cell and TLC were on this show.
Right.
I'm just saying, in the grand scheme of things, I would have no clue that Vince had pinned Triple H on Raw.
But basically, what I think it comes down to is, does Vince pinning Triple H make you more more inclined to want to see the match on pay-per-view. It's all that matters.
You want to see Triple H get his revenge.
Okay. I don't remember watching Raw at this time, so I don't remember what effect it had on me.
In theory, well, we'll talk about that later. There's a weird setup here for that Hell in a Cell. Anyway, they say they have not forgiven DX, and Shane talks about how Big Show is going to do all the work for them in the match and compares it to Canada relying on allies to do all the work for them. And Vince then says he's going to be kicking ass tonight as well, along with Big Show, and that they have no chance in hell. And he paused here, and I thought he was going to do a play on words and say, they have no chance in Canada, comparing it to hell.
Oh.
That would have been a good line.
Yeah, I suppose.
Anyway, just pretty much trying to get all the heat onto the McMahons here in Canada. Lawler here starts talking about Shinedown. It's his new favorite group, Shinedown. Tag title match.
Can you give a band any less credibility than to have Jerry Lawler put them over?
It's pretty low on the
hip new band. It's like your dad being into a band.
I would totally brand a band cool if your dad gave them the okay.
And my dad loves Celine Dion.
That's right. You enjoy it. Does he listen to anything else, or is he kind of a... does he have any groups he's a fan of?
I don't know. So he listens to stuff on the radio.
CHFI listener?
Actually, yeah.
So my parents listen to a lot.
Yeah. What is that guy? Don Jackson at night?
Yeah.
What's his name? What's the show?
I think that's right.
Yeah, but what's the show he does?
Oh, I don't know.
Lovers and Other Strangers.
Lovers and Other Strangers.
Yeah, he loves that.
Man. I want to... We need to do like a Dos Equis commercial with your dad.
No. No, we'll do one with your parents. How about that? You have an interesting...
I think your dad is way more at the top of the list.
No.
I'd be happy to do one with my parents one day.
Okay.
We got the tag titles here. The Spirit Squad defending the tag titles against the Highlanders. The Spirit Squad, of course, consisting of Mike Mondo, now of Ring of Honor, Nick Nemeth, better known as Dolph Ziggler today, Ken Doan, now known as Blocked from every WWE wrestler's Twitter, Johnny Jeter, who was a can't-miss prospect until WWE missed, and then we have Nick Mitchell, whose claim to fame was that he dated Tori Wilson, and then she left him and is now with Alex Rodriguez of the New York Yankees. What a group.
Yeah.
I will say right now, I enjoyed the Spirit Squad a lot, and watching this match back... Fuck, I enjoyed this group.
No, I can't agree with you, John.
This was a fun gimmick. And these guys were good.
Yeah, it was...
This was mid-card goodness.
Okay, but they weren't always in the mid-card. That was a problem. They were put positioned in the main event a lot of the time. And you described all this talent. There's no way any of them could have succeeded as this thing, individually.
Do you know who was originally supposed to be in the group and said no?
No, who?
The Pope.
Oh, is that right?
The Pope was supposed to be one of the male cheerleaders.
Wow. Well, good for him.
He would have been
like an extra in a movie.
No one would have even known.
Yeah.
He was even in it. So we've got this kind of demolition rules here where two members of the Spirit Squad would defend the tag titles. In this case, it was Kenny and Mikey with Nikki just cheering on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing how long this guy's been around when you think about it. Like, Dolph Ziggler is, like, our age. He's, like, 28, I think. Yeah. Maybe a little older. And came up here. This was his first run with the WWE. Then he was repackaged as a Kerwin White. No, first he was the caddy for Kerwin White in 2005.
Wow.
Going back 7 years. Then he got repackaged as this. And then later would come up. It was 2008 he got to be Dolph Ziggler.
Hmm.
Which every time you look at one of those characters, I mean, okay, you're going to be a golf caddy, then you're going to be a male cheerleader, and then you're going to be a spoof on Dirk Diggler. I mean, he's been given, on the surface, some horrible ideas that he has tried to make work.
He has. I still
hate that name.
I still hate it too, and I feel like if he were to win the title once he cashes in the money in the bank this time, I think it's a perfect time to completely rebrand him. At least in name, and give him a.
It just feels like they
gimmick.
Put so much into him that they're not going to. But
look at John Morrison. You can rename a guy.
Yeah.
No problem.
It's always a the idea of a big name change for someone established is that in the short term, it's a big change. But the long term, it does him a lot of good. Like, absolutely. When this guy goes on to a talk show, I mean, he's Dolph. Instantly a goof.
Yeah.
Dolph Ziggler. Like, it's just, it just breeds, I don't take this guy seriously to someone that doesn't follow WWE.
I agree.
Taking on the Highlanders. The yeah. Highlanders.
The Highlanders, yeah.
Which, when I hear, I think of those fish sticks. Highlanders fish sticks.
Right, yes.
Rory and Robbie.
Captain Highliner. Highliner.
Oh, Highliner. That's what it was.
Yeah. They kind of look like him.
Anyway. Early on, the Highlanders here have the advantage, working over the left arm of Mikey. And Rory gets sent into Kenny on the floor, battering ram style. Lots of double teaming here of the heels. It was the baby faces that were double teaming the heels at the start. Kenny gets drop kicked to the floor, and Robbie goes for a suicide dive. But Kenny moves out of the way, and Robbie just crashes and burns on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
This was a major tumble and a shift in the match. And Robbie continued to sell. They pulled Rory off the apron to avoid the tag. Spirit Squad then come back. They hit the heart attack, which even the announcers identified it as, mentioning Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart. Kenny then comes back and hits the shake, rattle, and roll to Robbie, complete with the hip shake. This was a...
Was Dusty working for him at this time?
Dusty was.
Hmm. Okay. Maybe that had something to do with it.
Well, that was the honky-tonk man's finish.
Didn't Dusty do stuff like do that shake and then...
He did a lot of shaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
From there, Rory came back with a flapjack, knocked two of them off the apron, then tossed Kenny over the top rope and onto the other Spirit Squad members on the floor, and then hit the springboard reverse suplex, but Kenny makes the save with Mikey getting pinned. Johnny then hits a kick to the back of Rory's head from outside the apron, and then Mikey hits a giant face buster and pins the Highlanders in 10 minutes. And Jim Ross proclaims that the tag division is still represented by 5 male cheerleaders. And Lawler says if idiots could fly, the Spirit Squad would be an airport.
What?
That's what I thought. I didn't know what that meant. Airports themselves cannot fly. They are stationary. They are locked to the ground by cement. Anyway.
I thought this was solid, too. Perhaps my opinion was still heightened by this hot crowd, but, you know, I thought this was just...
I like this match, and I enjoyed the Spirit Squad as a mid-card tag team.
As a mid-card tag team, yes. Not with any type of title.
I understand. Long-term, this was a gimmick killer for these guys, but they tried to make this work, and I don't think the male cheerleader thing is viewed as a negative against any of these guys that are still in the industry. I mean...
What? Like who?
No one doesn't take Dolph Ziggler seriously because of he was once part of the Spirit Squad.
Because most people don't know that he was. Mainstream fans.
Yeah.
So then what your argument is that people don't remember this, so it's okay.
I think people remember the Spirit Squad. I just don't think it's held against them.
They don't necessarily remember that these are the people in the Spirit Squad. Okay, well, first of all, who else is still in the industry?
Mike Mondo, he's in Ring of Honor.
Okay, and?
Well, that's it.
Well, there you go.
The others have been chased off.
Yeah.
So there we go. We've got a video preview for the Hell in a Cell and the feud between the DX and McMahons. Yep, this featured the Vince Loves Cock, shit pouring down from the ceiling, Vince's voice being altered, spray paint, Jonathan Coachman being pissed upon, and hiring the Big Show, and eventually Vince attacking DX with a lead pipe.
I imagine...
This would not air on Saturday Morning Slam.
No, it wouldn't. Although, I consider this a very child-friendly version of DX.
Yes, but isn't that amazing? In 2006, we considered this child-friendly.
Yeah.
By today's standards, this would be the most risque thing on WWE programming.
Yeah, oh, he said cock.
Vince loves cock. We're going to sell cock shirts.
Yeah.
Who would buy that?
I know one person. Yeah, I do too.
And outside of that, I've never seen a Vince Loves Cock shirt.
No.
I believe not. One shirt was sold. Ever.
To some
Radar.
Yeah, to Radar. From O'Grady's.
From O'Grady's. Who wore that shirt with pride.
Yeah. Every week.
Amazing.
He works at the Rogers Center for people who go to Jays games. He sells popcorn and beer. So just say hi to Radar.
The guy with the cock shirt now works at the BJ's game.
Wow. You're great. You're a genius.
The Hell in a Cell descends, and we get all these statistics. This is a brand new Hell in a Cell way. It's been
bigger,
reconfigured,
stronger,
bigger, stronger, faster.
Yeah,
it's on the gas. Hell in a Cell. It is 2,000 pounds. It is 20 feet higher, 3,500 square feet, and took over 2 weeks to build.
This took place just 2 months after that Punjabi prison match that we reviewed, the first one.
That is right. I was curious, why would they make it 20 feet taller?
I don't know.
First of all, there were no spots that involved going to the ceiling. And if there were, why would you make it higher?
To me, the appeal for me of the Hell in a Cell was that these people, it provided a platform for people to brawl out above the cage. That was always the draw for me, and that hadn't been happening at all, actually, in recent years.
In all the years of Hell in a Cell, I can guarantee you not one person said, I like this match, but I wish it was bigger.
Yeah.
I wish that cage was bigger.
Yeah.
Anyway, WWE
really
decided
sure.
to spend a lot of money to satisfy those potential criticisms.
Maybe they didn't think it looked big enough to them in person, maybe. But
maybe they were embracing the 16x9 world and wanting it to fill out the screen more.
I think
for long shots.
Yeah, but a taller cage would make it worse.
Maybe they were worried about sight lines. They wanted to make it more distracting for more people to just see fencing.
Yeah.
This is not a very aesthetically pleasing structure to watch live. I would much rather watch this on a pay-per-view, much like a UFC, than trying to watch through chain link.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you and I watched the most recent, the Triple H and Undertaker match at
we watched it on the screen.
Yeah, we were sitting pretty far, though, so much of what we saw was on the screen. But you know what?
Teddy Long, I guarantee you had a hard time watching this in the private box.
Probably. But I think the visual of just that cage descending from the ceiling is very impressive.
Yeah, it's really hard to compare. I believe that's the only Hell in a Cell match I've seen live. And that was just an incredible match for the crowd and who was involved in it. Yeah. Phenomenal reaction. But here we've got...
This one, quite different.
Different. Big Show and the McMahons against Triple H and Shawn Michaels, 3-on-2. Big Show was the ECW champion at the time.
Just as he was in the Punjabi prison match.
This was a time period where the brand-specific exclusivity was starting to be watered down significantly, where
right.
Big Show was on a Raw pay-per-view. And that was just the way things were.
He was on an ECW and a Raw pay-per-view.
Yes. So... Here we are selling this Hell in a Cell match. The announcers are talking about how this has ended careers. It's shortened lives. It's, 10 steps away from death. It's the craziest match in history. And then Shane McMahon comes out dancing. And Lawler notes, well, Shane doesn't look too worried. Too good. Too good. This is Lawler's best line of the whole pay-per-view. This goof comes out dancing for what should be the scariest match of a guy's life.
Yeah.
Dan Lavransky is not a fan of this man's dancing, and I've got to say,
Who is?
I don't know. Shane is. There are a lot of Shane McMahon fans out there.
There are a lot of fans, but I contend that they are blinded fans. Because why? This guy, basically, he gets to do whatever he wants. He gets to create a wrestler and add every special move that he's ever seen. He gets to do all the high spots, gets to have...
It's like playing Temple Run, and you start off with 100,000 coins to buy every shortcut and get to a million points that much faster.
He's got the cheat code. He's got the game genie.
He is the game genie of pro wrestling. That is the best analogy in all the years I've known you've given.
Yeah.
He has been given game genie.
Uh-huh.
There are people to this day, Wei, who have you... some of my friends look at Shane McMahon and Kurt Angle at King of the Ring as one of the best matches in wrestling history.
I like that match a lot.
It was a spectacle.
Great.
Absolutely.
Match. Yeah. But I feel like anybody could have had that match with Kurt Angle. Anybody. I'm sorry. He's a tough guy.
With non-gimmick glass.
He's a tough guy, no doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
I never take that away from him. But there are many more people more qualified than Shane McMahon to be put in that spot.
It's a
privilege to be put in that spot.
I will definitely say, I don't care how much money you threw at me. That spot he did 1 year at SummerSlam, where he took the back dive off the top of the Titantron at SummerSlam, I'm never taking that, ever in my life.
Yeah.
Not even getting to look at where you're going to land. That's balls right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, DX comes out. Biggest pop thus far on the show for them as they come out. But those quickly, Way, turn to booze as we realize this was Shawn Michaels in Canada. And we got You Screwed Brett chants directed at Michaels. I didn't even put two and two together until I heard those chants that this was the first time the WWE had done a pay-per-view in Toronto with Shawn Michaels on it since that Survivor Series.
Hadn't they done a Raw?
Not a pay-per-view.
Okay. But they've done Raw.
I remember, though, they always limited Shawn, like whether it was in Montreal or it was in Toronto. And this was like full out Shawn Michaels in a match.
Was Shawn not on that SummerSlam in Toronto in 04?
No, he wasn't.
Oh.
He was not on that pay-per-view.
Okay.
So anyway, directed at Shawn. Those chants, though, would not last very long. It was kind of just...
By this point, Brett had already been inducted into the Hall of Fame.
That's right. Yeah,
but it was still fun to chant. Don't get me wrong.
And there was no Earl Hebner. He'd been let go by this point.
Vince was in this match as well, though.
Yes, he was. But it's amazing that Vince doesn't get the heat for it because he just said, yeah, I did. I screwed him. And Shawn is the one who's asked for forgiveness, and he's the one that gets shit on.
They're like hecklers at a stand-up comedy.
Yeah, bar. You got to be able to. Vince doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a heel.
Michael's hairline 6 years ago, much better shape than it is today.
Yeah, which wasn't even that great back
then. No, it wasn't. But by comparison,
yeah,
much better state. He sent Shane off the apron and into the steel. Shane started bleeding 2 minutes in here, and then Hunter grabbed a screwdriver and drilled it into the head of Vince McMahon. So both McMahons were bleeding within the first 5 minutes of this match. Game genie. Here we go. Blood in the first 2 minutes from both heels. And then DX double-teamed Big Show, sent him into the steps, continued to beat on the McMahons. This was the issue here, was that DX were just so strong that you couldn't possibly have them sell here without the help of Big Show.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually like to go back, and we have reviewed that SummerSlam from the match the month prior, where they didn't have Big Show in there. It was like, I can't take Hunter selling for Vince and Shane seriously.
And how did they win that match?
I can't remember.
Yeah, me neither.
They might have been DQ'd or something. We should really do our job as journalists. But Wei, talk to us a bit about kind of this match and kind of your impressions on this one. They got a lot of time here.
Well, the DX definitely get the advantage to start, but then when Big Show kind of helps out, the McMahons start to get the advantage, and at this point it's really just the Big Show versus DX and Big Show dominating.
DX beat the McMahons clean at SummerSlam to set up Hell in a Cell.
Oh, okay. Well, no, they won a match on TV, too, didn't they? Something happened. They exchanged wins. I just thought this was a waste of a Hell in a Cell, in my opinion.
Well, it was done, I think, just to pop the number for this pay-per-view. We got one spot where Shane delivered the Van Terminator, and Big Show was standing. Who took it? It was Hunter?
Yeah.
And Big Show just gets in his face. Oh! And made these, like, growling sounds at Hunter. Like, the worst thing in history just happened to Hunter. Like, you got owned here by Shane.
Yeah.
Great moment.
Sounded like an orca whale.
That's what it did sound like here. The Big Show making whale noises. Later on, when Vince regained his composure, he pulled his pants down. And they were going to have Shawn kiss his ass. But what happened here was they made their comeback and stopped Vince from putting his ass into anyone's face. Michaels pulls in Vince for a Big Show splash. DX and Crotch is Big Show on the post. Begin their comeback. They grab chairs. They put... this would not be on Saturday Morning Slam either. They put Shane's neck into the chair, and then Michaels hit a top rope elbow drop onto the chair, theoretically breaking Shane's neck during the match. This was not even the finish.
No.
This was to take out Shane, and Shane started bleeding from the mouth. He had internal injuries, but they could not stop the match because this was Hell in a Cell.
Mm. I always like seeing internal injuries, signified by blood coming
That's
out
sick.
Of the mouth.
Big Show stops them, brings some steps in, then takes a chair to the gut, lands on the steps, then takes the Sweet Chin Music and gets bent over on the top rope. Vince stands up to DX, almost in babyface-like fashion, standing up to these two big babyfaces. They pull down Big Show's singlet, revealing his big ass, and Vince is sent face first into his ass for what seemed like a good 30 seconds.
This is great. I really like this spot.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Jim Ross had the line of the pay-per-view saying that he needs Dr. Heine as a play on the skit from the year before,
right,
where Vince performed surgery on a fake Jim Ross with his assistant, Alex Greenfield.
Huh.
So Jim Ross here getting in a nice shot here at Vince. As much as we say about Vince, you know, humiliating others, he at least will, when the time comes, he is right there to humiliate himself.
Oh, and Big Show by this point was, you know, he had just wrestled a long match. He was probably very sweaty.
Oh, this was gross. Stunky. This was so gross.
This was his bare ass. He didn't have a thong on or nothing. Just asshole exposed right there.
Hunter then gets a sledgehammer. Vince takes the sweet chin music, is down on his knees, and Hunter from behind breaks the sledgehammer on the spine of Vince. This gets a holy shit chant. Mm-hmm. Hunter pins Vince 25 minutes and 4 seconds. They played up the violence really big here on commentary, and this really did signal the end of the feud as Vince and Shane are taken out on stretchers in neck braces.
I thought it was a very entertaining comedy match with some very good spots. I mean, initially I was thinking this is definitely a waste of a Hell in a Cell. In hindsight, it kind of is, because how much use of the cell was there actually? In many of these Hell in a Cell matches that we've seen over the past 10 years, the standards set by the initial ones where guys would, you know, jump off the top, they don't really do that anymore. Instead, what they are, they just do like really brutal, hardcore matches with a lot of blood within the confines and the visuals of, right, of this cell. But as with many Vince and Shane matches, the booking is always very smart. They rely on a lot, yep, of great gimmicks and overall
hide the weaknesses.
Exactly.
Which was smart. And this was a spectacle that was booked around those weaknesses that were Vince and Shane. Got a promo for WrestleMania 23 and then a video package on the career of Trish Stratus. And they gave her the Hall of Fame theme music at the beginning here. Mm-hmm. They showed she had an on-screen romance at the time with Carlito, which probably everyone's remembered. And this video package, Way, we got a cameo from Amanda Walsh.
That's right.
From Much Music.
Much Music, yeah. Wow. Local Canadian TV there.
Amazing. And
what is she up to now, I wonder?
Amanda Walsh, she's doing stuff with Comedy Bar.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. She's doing their online series.
That's cool.
Doing a few appearances, and then she was doing pilots down in L.A. She was on Agnew's show recently on The Late Shift.
I don't know anything about Much Music these days, aside from Damian Abraham.
Damian Abraham is our pipeline to Much Music these days. So anyway, the story here was that Trish was going to announce her retirement match, but Lita eavesdropped and then reported it on the WWE website. She was the dirt sheet reporter.
Yeah.
Spoiling an angle.
Yeah, that's right.
I can't help but think that their genesis of this was just trying to lash out at some internet report that got leaked, and they were turning it around, so making the heel here the leaker.
I'm surprised they haven't made a dirt sheet reporter character on their TV.
They used to in WWF Magazine have The Informer. And every month they wrote an article, and it was all like backstage gossip and news that someone's heard, like secondhand stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it was Russo who wrote it. He was so involved in the magazine at that time. But yeah, they had like kind of their own. It was even like the double columns, like the Observer.
Really?
Yeah.
They should bring back the Davey Meltzer, that gimmick somebody had on some indie.
UWF. Yeah. Used to use that.
There's this indie jobber named Davey Meltzer.
I love it. It's awesome.
You could use the David Meltzer Titantron.
Amazing. With the graph.
Yeah. Wrestling fans are just fucked.
I love it. It's the best. I love the subculture. That's the fun part. So we go here. Lita defending the women's title against Trish Stratus. Stratus, not surprisingly, getting a huge reaction here. And the storyline was that with a win here, she could break the Fabulous Moolah's record of holding the title 6 times, with Trish potentially winning it for a 7th time. There were thank you, Trish chants at the start of the match. And Jim Ross brings up the fact that Trish has never lost at Unforgiven. She's like the female Undertaker.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
The streak was killed by the marketing team who got rid of Unforgiven.
Maybe there'll be a, there's going to be a DVD here.
The streak.
Yeah. Part two.
Holds up. It's got like 5-0 at Unforgiven. And Trish Stratus, this was, of course, in 2005, she suffered that back injury, and that led her to finding yoga, which she has grown into her career now, running a Stratosphere Yoga. And this was at a time when she implemented a lot of this into her matches, including these handstands, which we saw like four of during this match.
These handstand into head scissor.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
And we saw a handstand into a leg scissors early on, then a fez press.
I don't know if that's necessarily a yoga move, though.
Well, she credits yoga with adding to so much flexibility. I mean, you can look like she really got leaned out here after discovering yoga. She looks
still does.
Fantastic shape. Yeah. Still is. You're right. We saw a handstand into a Hurricane Rana off of the steel steps on the floor. Very little margin for error here.
Yeah.
Executed very well. Ross brings up that these two teamed up at Unforgiven 2003.
He
the classic Trish Stratus Lita tag team match of 03.
He really went all out in his Unforgiven research.
My goodness.
He, read the book on Unforgiven.
Stratus comes back with a bunch of stomps and then licks her hands incessantly as she goes to chop Lita. And Lita then blocks another handspring Hurricane Rana, and Stratus seats herself on the top. They then tumble to the floor, and this is when Trish had some problems with her pants.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, they did.
We had some crackage.
Yeah, yeah. Well, her pants were, like, half uncovered anyway.
Well, that's
see-through, kind of, on the sides, like a shoelace. Like a shoelace tongue?
Yes.
Was missing?
These were like a Lululemon style. Maybe.
What? No, not at all.
They kind of did.
They
looked like a similar material.
Okay, but Lululemon.
It's like a beige version.
Lululemon doesn't sell. Anyway.
I said style.
We were talking about Lululemon on this podcast. I think we're alienating.
Hey, I guarantee you there's a Lululemon expert that's going to correct me on our thread somewhere. Lita knocks her to the mat, misses a top rope moonsault. Trish gets a two count, goes for the Stratisfaction, but Lita blocks and sends Trish to the floor. Lita gets the advantage. Trish comes back with a bunch of punches. Lita with a reverse Russian leg sweep. Great here with the heel facials. And then Trish hits another handspring Hurricane Rana off the top, and then the chick kick, which was originally dubbed the chick kick, actually, by Mirko Krokop.
Shut up.
That's what he used to call it, the chick kick. No, you die. With the chick kick.
I'd buy that.
gets a two count for a great pop. Trish reverses the twist of fate, goes for the Stratisfaction, which Lita blocks again, tries for the pin. Trish counters, and she was on top of Lita, didn't go for the pin, but instead turns it into the sharpshooter, and the place goes crazy here.
This was the one moment I do remember from this pay-per-view very vividly. A great idea to get a giant pop from this audience.
And Lita tries to make the ropes. Trish pulls her back into the middle, and they call for the bell right as Lita, kind of her legs kind of burst out here, and Trish gets the win. 11 minutes and 35 seconds. Trish wins the title. Ross compares this to the Maple Leafs winning the Stanley Cup.
No hyperbole
there. But this was a great send-off here, to the point that when this happened, I was stunned. Because how many anyone outside of Ric Flair after that WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels have gotten this kind of a send-off? The woman in her last match putting the title on her in her hometown, where the WWE is notorious for not booking people well in their hometown. This was such a great moment.
Even Ric Flair, I doubt, would receive any title upon leaving a company. I don't see that. And, you know, you can argue that, all right, it's just, you know, it's a women's title. They can afford to do something like this. But even that is pretty unprecedented. Look at how many women just exit this company on either, you know, flat terms or bad terms in general. And look at the treatment that they usually
compare
get.
This to 2 months later when Lita left at the Survivor Series, and her send-off was having tampons thrown at her.
Oh, Jesus. There's a tidbit for Linda's campaign. But, you know, Trish, perhaps the most beloved female wrestler ever in the industry. I mean, beloved by the fans, the wrestlers, and even the office, you know, to receive a send-off as perfect as this, you can't really ask for more.
And you talk about the IC title and its stature today. How about the women's division?
Yep.
From then to now. I mean, you don't have that character like a Trish, like a Lita, that felt like really important characters.
Trish's career lasted 7 years. This was the culmination of a 7-year career. Kelly Kelly has been in the company for 6 years.
Yep.
And she just left recently. Was anybody clamoring for any type of send-off, even a tenth of what this one was?
As one of our title bout trivia contestants put it, Kelly Kelly has a finisher? So anyway, a great moment in Toronto, and it's like these kind of moments that makes it really cool when you're watching wrestling where, yeah, it's really easy to get heat on someone in their hometown, but sometimes when you go the opposite and you give people a feel-good moment, those are the moments you remember so crystal clear like you do with the sharpshooter spot.
Yeah.
And it makes Trish this enduring figure that you can bring back at any time and people care about because you gave such an – like how many fans will 20 years from now remember that Ric Flair retirement ceremony? Mm-hmm. Because it was so great. Mm-hmm. And it would have been so easy for Ric Flair to come out for his retirement and the heel of the month attacks him mm-hmm. for cheap heat for a 3-week program. So a great segment. That being said – we then use Trish's retirement to try and get Randy Orton over as a heel here in the very next segment where mm-hmm. Todd Grisham of ESPN, their MMA reporter, mm-hmm. interviews Orton. He congratulates Stratus but says no one cares about her retirement unless you're a Canadian. He brings up winning the world title in this very building 2 years earlier and calls Trish Stratus a bitch.
Yeah.
And he's going to make Carlito his bitch in the next match.
Ooh, clever.
Very clever. This was after Randy Orton, he had been suspended earlier in this year, then returned in the spring on Raw mm-hmm. after leaving SmackDown and was coming off his loss to Hulk Hogan the prior month at SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
And this was right before they formed a Rated RKO. Mm-hmm. So Orton was kind of just, you know, just kind of floating around here on Raw.
Kind of like how he is now.
Yeah, really. I would say more upside at this point, back in 06. Today Maybe. He feels like a character that, I don't know, you're really trying to squeeze life out of in terms of long term. So we've got Randy Orton and Carlito. And I don't know what it was about Carlito here, but you can tell when this guy had his working shoes on and when he didn't give a fuck. And this was a night where this guy seemed really motivated, if not very stiff.
Well, he just watched his girlfriend retire and have a win the title in a great send-off.
And then she was called a bitch by his opponent.
Oh, yeah.
Carlito hits a backflip off of the second rope and dropkicks Orton and then mocks his pose. Orton then goes for a quebrada into a swanton, then a full quebrada where he lands elbow first onto Orton's face and busts him open from the mouth. Sucks to be Randy Orton here. Yeah. Orton comes back with a drop kick, sends Carlito.
Maybe he had internal injuries.
Yeah, he did. But he was going to power through. He throws Carlito into the barricade, delivers the Garvin stomp, which was a... The stomp did not stay in his repertoire.
What?
The Garvin stomp, where he would just stomp on every part of his body.
Okay.
Very famous maneuver. Orton then applied a long rear chin lock. Carlito got out, hit a lariat. Very stiff offense, as I noted here from Carlito. Orton then hit a backbreaker. He went for the RKO. Carlito countered with a backcracker. And then Carlito is seated on the top rope, kicks Orton away. And then he goes for a springboard off the top rope and does like a forward somersault into the RKO. This was timed incredible. And Orton pins him at 8:41. What an awesome finish.
This was a great-looking finish. I mean, I don't consider this one as memorable as that Shelton Benjamin Shawn Michaels super kick, you know, where Shelton goes for the springboard and Shawn hits him with the super kick. But this was very similar, and the way they shot this too was perfect. It was like, you know, Carlito was diving right into your room, and Orton just pops up with the RKO. He's always had amazing timing with that move. And
Evan Bourne, when he did the
shooting star,
yeah, into the RKO,
that was amazing.
I mean, there's been some fantastic finishes involving the RKO. Mm-hmm.
This looked great. And this, you know, this made the match, this finish.
It was great. I totally had forgotten about this match and this finish, but this was a
match was
bit of a nice little surprise part of Unforgiven if you went back and watched it. They keep showing Teddy Long in the private box, and then we got a preview for the main event with Edge and Cena, where the prior month, Edge had defeated John Cena in his hometown of Boston, and now the rematch was in Edge's hometown of Toronto, and the build-up featured Edge throwing the spinner belt into a river and then debuting his new Rated R spinner belt, and then Cena taking Edge to the Long Island Sound and throwing him into the Long Island Sound, which Edge later talked about how it had all this, it was like this horrendous water where he like could have gotten all these diseases and stuff, and it was like a horrendous idea in hindsight, but one that at least people remember. And it all led to the stipulation being set where Cena could get a rematch, but Edge got to name where it took place, that being Toronto, and what the stip would be in a TLC match, which Edge had never lost and Cena had never been in, setting the stage for this main event in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So Edge comes out first without Lita, and Ross brings up how Buddy Rogers never had a TLC match.
No, he did not.
This is the new WWE. And Lawler notes that Edge has done every media outlet in Toronto to get the media on his side for this match. And there were chances.
What side were you on?
You know what way? I was trying to be a responsible journalist. I was neutral here.
Yeah.
Not take sides, despite media manipulation. There were chants of Cena sucks before he even came out. Got a chorus of boos as his music hit. And then Lillian Garcia did the big title introductions for both. Crowd was just one-sided here for Edge. They hated John Cena. And that had always been a mark throughout this whole feud. Before they started this program, this was when Cena and the boos really started in, like, late 05. And then it was the feud with Edge, where Edge was able to get the crowd back behind Cena. And then they came to Toronto, where this crowd was not taken to John Cena, but they really set it up where Ross pretty much said, this has all been designed for Cena to be booed. This is in his Edge's hometown. This is, of course, they're going to be cheering for Edge. So they kind of handicapped it with that note that Cena should be booed here.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Too bad they can't use that excuse everywhere.
Yeah, they should just always have Cena fight guys in their hometown.
Yeah.
Crowd was all negative here to start with Cena. Very basic start to the match. There were two chairs placed together in the ring, and the first big bump was Cena taking an inverted DDT onto them, and the crowd was just applauding this. Edge brought the ladder in for the first time, and so many different spots throughout this. Cena hip-tossing Edge onto a ladder. Some of these bumps away were really tough to watch, knowing the state of Edge's neck years later, which would end his career prematurely. But this match, to me, was just... you know, you don't have to see too many matches in a guy's career taking these kinds of bumps, which are just nuts.
That's why they're on pay-per-view.
That is true. Sometimes on free TV, though, as well.
Oh, yeah.
Edge blocks a superplex, tries to counter with a sunset flip off of the corner, but misses the table. Crowd booed this, but then they...
They just kind of...
They moved
fell.
On.
They
yeah.
fell into a pile.
Two veterans here, or at least Edge here, the veteran here, didn't try it again. Just moved on, and it led to a power slam through the table.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever. The spot was lost. We'll move on. We saw Edge run up the ladder and cross-body Cena on the floor. Edge used a chair on Cena in the ring, but then Cena avoided a concerto. Cena then put Edge in between the ladder and applied the FU Edge tap, but of course that won't end the match. Cena went for the five-knuckle shuffle, but finished it by climbing the ladder and dropping his fist onto him. Amazing way, I've noted this before, that as much as all the changes have happened with the WWE's PG programming, the term five-knuckle shuffle has somehow survived.
I honestly didn't know that was a dirty term until you mentioned it.
Yeah, well, that's the five-knuckle shuffle. I guess you can give your plausible deniability that it means, it means a punch to the face.
Yeah.
I guess. It's good he never called it like a...
Kids everywhere use that term. Man.
The pocket pool or something.
The pocket pool.
Playing pocket pool?
Oh.
The pool cue?
I'm really not hip with the lingo.
John Cena sets up a table. His Edge gets a chair and hits Cena in the head with a chair. Big chair shot to the head of Cena here. Edge stacks two tables up, puts Cena on top of the first one, but Cena gets out, knocks Edge to the floor, and that's when the big ladder is brought out. And Edge spears Cena off of another ladder. Cena comes back, power bombs Edge into a ladder. They continued on here. Lita eventually ran out as Cena's climbing the ladder. And Lita tips the ladder over, and Cena clears the top rope and goes through a table on the floor.
I thought it was... I mean, I don't often see John Cena in these types of matches. So, you know, seeing Edge take these bumps, it's really not surprising. But to see Cena take all this...
The story of this match was that everyone, you know, it seemed like they were preaching to a certain crowd that was negative to Cena, that he won't take big risks. And in this match, it was like he was proving himself to this audience that was negative on him.
Mm-hmm.
So a very interestingly booked match here to try and get Cena over as kind of a tough guy to the crowd. Anyway, so Lita tips the ladder. Jerry Lawler outright calls Lita a bitch.
Yep.
Very different language in this time.
This won't make it on Slam?
Yeah, this might not be on the next ladder match DVD. Edge climbs up. Cena gets in. Gets hit in the back by Lita with a chair. And this causes Cena to tip the ladder with Edge on top of it. And Edge goes over the top through two tables on the... Actually, he cleared one table and then went through the other. And Edge looked dead. Cena then hits Lita with the FU. And Cena starts to climb, but Edge comes back from the dead. They fight to the top of the ladder. Cena puts him on his shoulders and delivers an FU to Edge off the ladder through the two stacked tables. And Cena grabs the title at 25 minutes and 28 seconds. And Ross puts Cena over huge here for winning the match. He hugs his father at ringside in the front row, and then he holds the title up at the entrance. Still got his share of boos at the end, but the crowd was pretty impressed with this match.
Yeah.
And this was a hot main event and capped off a really good show, I thought.
Mm-hmm. This was a fantastic, fantastic match. I'm surprised more people don't really talk of it, or this pay-per-view in general, like you said.
I think because it was a small, like a B show, and wasn't one of the big four, that it kind of gets lost in the glut of pay-per-views. But for those that seek this out, this was a hell of a pay-per-view.
Yep, top to bottom. Entertaining stuff in almost every match. The Trish Stratus retirement, it was, you know, very, very memorable and very important for especially Canadians, or fans of women wrestling, and just fans of wrestling in general. So overall, I give the show an 8 out of 10.
I give this an 8.5 out of 10, especially for the fact this is a Raw only pay-per-view. You're talking about a half the roster, basically, and you know, you obviously had a lot of name value, but a great show in the ring from that opener, the Trish match. You know, Hell in a Cell delivered what it promised, and that TLC match was fantastic. You can put that up with any of the other TLC matches, in my opinion. Really great stuff, and as much as people might knock John Cena, the guy has had some phenomenal performances. Mm-hmm. He's not the crispest worker in the world, but for big matches like that, I mean, John Cena has had some incredible matches over the past decade, and this was certainly one of them with Edge. Probably his best opponent. I thought Edge and Cena, that was the feud that, to me, defined those two, was that feud in 2006 that really, those are the two that I will most associate with the other. Let's head over to some feedback, though, Wei, because there was a number of it for people who did remember this show. And we'll start off with Caesar. This was one of my favorite pay-per-views of the year, next to Royal Rumble 06, a show that I attended live, along with WrestleMania 22. The Spirit Squad has to be one of the most successful to get a gimmick like theirs and be able to make it work. It's amazing how one of these cheerleaders is about to win the World Heavyweight title. Armando Estrada was such a great character. I live in a town where it's mostly made up of Cubans, so I can really relate to the stereotypical character, although I find the pairing of a Cuban and a Samoan kind of odd. I saw this event on DVD, and one of the extras is a match that has Mr. McMahon versus Triple H 6 days prior, and if McMahon had worn his tank top, he would have been the clear-cut winner for the Scott Putski Award. He had a physique that would make regular Putski winner Lex Luger cry in shame. Anyways, you really don't get cell matches as intense as these anymore. It's a good example of blood really making a match. Today's matches are just forced because it has its own pay-per-view. Was the Mark Henry and Randy Orton feud last year so intense in 4 weeks that it warrants a cell match? At the time, I questioned why Big Show would be in a cell match when at the Great American Bash
Bash. The Great American Bash 06, he cried like a baby about being in the Punjabi prison. This pay-per-view marked the day the Divas division was done. Lita and Trish had a very good match in front of a crowd that was invested in it. Today they barely get a reaction or attention.
Eric in Miami, the thing I remember most about this pay-per-view was the build-up between Edge, when Edge told Cena in a promo that he had the athletic skills of a retarded gorilla, and at the show, somebody made a sign of Cena with a gorilla's arm doing the "you can't
that's
see
right.
me," and Jerry Lawler, who didn't bother to remember anything, just saying, "You see, Cena has fans here."
That's great. Caesar also noted here that the Kane fake Kane match was at Vengeance from earlier that summer. Over here to Christian Small, one of the things that stands out to me about this show is the importance it got. It really felt like a must-watch event rather than a B-show pay-per-view, which it could have been seen as. I thought the show was pretty stellar overall. While I wasn't much of a fan of DX at the time, the Hell in a Cell did what it had to do. Although I'm never a fan of the lower numbers winning in a handicap situation, but it was Vince and Shane, so they really counted as one in my book. I think while Trish and Lita had better matches during their run, this was a perfect way to send Trish off, much better than how Lita would be sent off months later. Carlito and Randy really put on a show-stealing match in my eyes, and it could have made Carlito a big contender. But much like the Kofi program, WWE wanting Orton to win most of the time did more harm than good, something they still haven't learned from. Finally, I loved the main event at the time. I wanted nothing more than Cena to lose, as I thought SmackDown would have benefited from him. I really didn't like Cena, and I loved Edge as champion, but once again, Cena wins when he really shouldn't have. Regardless of that fact, it cannot take away from the atmosphere of the match and the overall good performance. Edge really was the first guy to get the best out of Cena. I remember a little bit after they had a fantastic cage match on Raw. Really shows how good Edge was when he could get the people cheering Cena at a time when he was getting booed out of the building.
From Mark in Calgary, the recap video for the Hell in a Cell match almost made me glad I wasn't watching at this time. Vince loves cock, Vince getting covered in poop, and everything in between looked like some of the absolute worst and horrible WWE comedy. That being said, I actually really enjoyed the match. It wasn't a technical classic by any means, but between Vince and Shane bumping like crazy, the blade jobs, a hot crowd, Vince making Scott Putski look like Stan Stansky, and Trips, Shawn, and Big Show all working really hard, made for everything a match with the McMahon should be, though shoving Vince's head in Big Show's ass was really stupid. Still, it was really more entertaining than the angle leading up to it looked. Trish's match with Lita was good, as was the case whenever they worked against each other. Really makes today's women's division look like more of a joke. Trish having her great retirement in her hometown was awesome and uncharacteristically classy of the WWE. The Orton-Carlito match was pretty boring and not really notable. I loved the main event. The Toronto crowd was so hot for Edge. A couple really impressive bumps, especially that FU Edge took off the ladder through the table stacked, but both guys worked really well, so it was a lot more than just a spot fest. Overall, this is a pretty strong show, a 7 out of 10.
Andrew Sheehy, great choice for this week. The year 2006 was a little bizarre for the WWE, but this show is one of the best from that year. The opener between Hardy and Nitro was a solid start to the show. Kane Umaga was average with a great post-match brawl. The Samoan Bulldozer was booked well in 06 before falling off the following year. DX carried the Hell in a Cell match against the McMahons and Big Show, but it's only remembered for one of the most disgusting moments in pro wrestling history with HBK and Triple H shoving Vince's head into Show's 500-pound ass. As a 16-year-old, I was a huge mark for DX, but in retrospective, they were too corny during this time. The Trish-Lita match for the WWE Women's title was the last great women's match in the WWE. It was fitting that Trish would end her career as a full-time competitor by making Lita tap out to the sharpshooter. It's a shame that the quality of women's wrestling in the WWE has taken a huge fall in the past few years. Finally, the TLC match between John Cena and Edge for the WWE title was a classic. The brutality, psychology, and hot crowd made this match great, with Cena FUing the rated R superstar through three tables to kick off a title reign that lasted over a year and led to Mr. Copeland forming rated RKO with Randy Orton the following month. Decent show, 7.5 out of 10.
From Flames.
If that's your real name.
All right. I think I remember tuning into The Law right afterwards. The TLC match was pretty damn good. I really liked the series of matches Edge and Cena had. It was cool how SummerSlam was in Cena's hometown, and Unforgiven was in Edge's hometown. This was also the start of Cena's 380 days. I think if Cena didn't get injured, he would have had held onto that title into 2008 till WrestleMania 24. The Hell in a Cell match was great. I loved it when DX put Vince's head up Big Show's ass. I liked it how Stratus won her retirement match, but 2 months later, Lita didn't. To me, the Divas division has sucked since Trish retired 6 years ago. The Kane-Umaga match was just a normal monster match. All in all, I give this show an 8 out of 10.
Going now to Andrew McDonald. I actually attended the show, and it was my first pay-per-view slash televised wrestling show ever. I had only been to 4 WWE shows in my life, all house shows, as they never really came to Cape Breton. It's either Halifax or nothing. I haven't watched the show since then, but I will try to give some comments on what I remember. Firstly, the pyro is insanely loud, especially Jeff Hardy's. The match is pretty good, but the pyro really sticks out. One disappointment from the show is the tag title match. I watched the Highlanders and OVW through the magic of BitTorrent, and I enjoyed their work. I enjoyed the gimmick and thought they could really help establish the tag division, but it was the first time I felt a dead crowd, and it really took the match down a notch for me. There was a brief Robbie chant, but I felt that match would spell the end for the Highlanders. Watching Trish's last match for at least a while was great, too. The problem with the Divas now is they're not people, but walking... I'm not going to say that. That's very mean.
Yeah.
People love Trish personally, not because she was an attractive lady. They saw her at her best and worst and grew to respect her through her hard work. You can't feel emotion for body parts, only people. And WWE treats the Divas nowadays like body parts, now more than ever. And the last big thing I remember was the main event, which was a great match. But what I loved was this little 9-year-old above me yelling at the people for booing John Cena. What is wrong with you people, he yelled. Overall, an 8 out of 10 show, but I was also there live, so that may make me a little biased.
David Duvenberg, this show will always go down as one of the top B shows ever. They built it up where you actually felt like you'd miss something important if you missed this show. What a concept. Trish was such a huge star that just the story of this being her retirement match was worth buying the show to see, and that was a rare perfect ending for a superstar. The sharpshooter finish made everyone go nuts and was a real feel-good moment. I love the ending of Carlito and Orton. It ranked right up there with HBK and Shelton, but just like Carlito, it fell short of being amazing. I sure wish that guy would have got his shit together because he was very entertaining and one of my favorites to watch. Cena and Edge was amazing, plain and simple. As much as people hate Cena, that guy can sure deliver an amazing match when the time comes. This one was right behind his match with Umaga at the Rumble. Edge at the time was the hottest heel out there, and any time he was on TV, it made it that much better. Overall, I give this show a 9 out of 10.
Go to Mike O'Brien. This pay-per-view is one of the high points in such a shit year. 2006 consisted mainly of the terrible McMahon-DX feud, awful SmackDown pay-per-views and shows, and just all around a very worn-out and atrocious product that WWE was giving us. However, this pay-per-view was the exception, as it was entertaining from start to finish. Cena Edge stole the show and featured a crazy bump to the finish. I really enjoyed the chemistry between the two, both on the mic and in the ring, and one could argue that this rivalry was the Michaels Bret of our generation, with the two being complete polar opposites. Amazing match, and one that they would top in their last man standing match 3 years later at Backlash 09. A fun fact, Edge stated in the John Cena My Life DVD that the only time that he's been knocked unconscious in the ring was when Cena FU'd him with the ladder. The women's match was emotional, with Trish getting a huge win to wrap up a great career, and the Hell in a Cell match was a good blend of comedy and action. I did not enjoy the feud between DX and the McMahons, but this blow-off was great and well done. Tag and the Umaga-Kane matches weren't exactly classics, but very watchable, and by no means were terrible. Hardy Nitro was good, but is it just me, or did Hardy act like he did not want to be there? He looked very sloppy the entire match. Overall, strong show with an amazing main event, great Hell in a Cell match, and an emotional end to a storied career for Trish Stratus. 8.5 out of 10.
From Gervier Man, this pay-per-view was a big surprise for me. I was expecting only the main event to deliver, and did it ever. But the entire card was well put together. The IC title match was good, but a little long, and the Kane Umaga and the tag title matches were serviceable filler. Highlight of the undercard was Orton and Carlito. Also, Trish and Lita for the Women's Championship was great just because of the hometown crowd and the basic but effective narrative spun for the match. The match is a great example of how to get people caring a little more for women's wrestling. The Hell in a Cell match was a lot more violent than I expected. Not usually a big proponent of blood, but it did tell a great story inside the cell, something missing with the now annual Hell in a Cell pay-per-view matches. Others before me have probably echoed my positive reception of the main event, so I won't dwell much longer than that. Overall, an 8 out of 10 show. I wanted to ask if either of you know why it's been so long since there's been a WWE pay-per-view in Toronto.
Yeah, it's interesting.
This was the last one.
This was the last pay-per-view that they did have in Toronto. I don't know. They just haven't run the market as often. I mean, they come here for television tapings every now and then. You would think, especially
because the dollar is now much more on par with the U.S., that you would see more dates in Canada. But for whatever reason, they have not come back to Toronto. I mean, WrestleMania has been talked about, but nothing set. So I don't know. I don't have an answer. We go to Corey Ferreira. This easily was one of the best shows that WWE did in 2006. The TLC match between Edge and Cena is a great one, and I find underrated compared to ones done in the early 2000s. Cena was clearly positioned as the heel here, as the crowd was a pro-Edge crowd. I guess the idea was for each man to win in his opponent's hometown, as Edge had beat Cena in Boston at SummerSlam, and I guess it added heat to the feud. The Hell in a Cell I have mixed feelings on. It finally ended the god-awful DX McMahon feud, which was named Worst Feud of the Year in the Observer Awards. The match is what you would expect Shawn and Hunter to beat on the McMahons a lot while Show's out of action, then Show comes back and kicks Hunter and Shawn's ass. But did we really need to see Vince McMahon's head shoved up Big Show's ass? In my opinion, the show saw the end of the true Divas division as Trish had her final full-time match for the company. I guess it was fitting for them to have Trish win the title in her final match in Canada. I was shocked as hell when I saw Dave Meltzer give the match 3.25 stars, considering the ratings of recent Divas matches in the WWE. Overall, a solid show with two very good matches and a great main event. And between Trish, Vince, and Big Show, this might have been the most ass ever on a WWE pay-per-view.
Wow. That's
three people.
That's a great stat. All right. Paul Ellett from England says, I think Cena and Edge may have had one more match after the show, a cage match on Raw, but this was a fitting finale to their nine-month program. You had all the necessary elements for a big-time match that makes wrestling worth watching. Cena being teased to go to SmackDown, which felt like a realistic short-term possibility, Edge's history with TLC matches, and the hometown advantage with Toronto being a hot anti-Cena crowd. Something that sprung to mind was that Edge says in his DVD how the last time he was in Toronto before this match, he was a face in 04 but was booed, and yet when he returned as a solidified main event heel, he was cheered. The setups for spots made sense and built to something worthwhile, and as usual, Cena and Edge with Lita had terrific chemistry. The great main event TLC match, while Cena's somber mannerisms at the end, despite winning, were really effective, especially since Cena is often all smiles the night after a pay-per-view defeat. A really great show to watch alongside you guys. I wish all B-level pay-per-views could mean this much. 8 out of 10.
And our final bit of feedback is from Harun from Sweden. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but hopefully I'm close. One of my favorite pay-per-views from that year. I was really into wrestling back then, and I was a huge Cena fan, so I was really enjoying the whole feud between him and Edge. The TLC match is one of my favorite matches, and it's probably Cena's best match ever. It was full of great spots and had a nice ending. I don't remember the other matches that much other than DX shoving Vince's head into Show's ass, Trish retiring, and the ending of Orton versus Carlito. It was one of the first RKO counters that I can remember, and it looked awesome. And thank you to everyone for your feedback. A well-remembered pay-per-view for those that do remember Unforgiven 2006. And for those maybe that you want us to jog your memory, we are now going to go back to the Law episode from that very night right after the pay-per-view. First up, it is Jason Agnew giving his live thoughts on the show that he attended at the Air Canada Center.
Jason Agnew's actually made it back to the station. He bolted out of that pay-per-view.
I dressed
back
fast.
Here, live in action. So we'll get his comments. But first, John, let's do the power poll for tonight.
Simple question tonight. What you thought of WWE Unforgiven? Where are your thumbs, up, down, or in the middle?
Okay, so just go to the website. It's liveaudiowrestling.com. Vote in the poll, and we'll keep you abreast of how it is turning out throughout the night. So, Jay, you had a chance to see it live. I definitely enjoyed it as a pay-per-view show. There wasn't, like, a crazy outstanding match, but there certainly wasn't anything bad. A couple of points just specifically I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Cena match with Edge at the end there. By the end, I got the impression the crowd was all rooting for Cena by the end.
I was so disappointed being there live. When Cena came out, at the beginning of the night, there was the opening, and there were pictures of Cena in the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd was crapping on him. Completely crapping on him. Then when he came out for his final match, it was half-half. It was a 50-50 split. I was disappointed at this point. And by the time he won that match, everyone was rooting for Cena.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, when the cameras went dark, you know, they played Edge's music. He got up. He got like a standing ovation
right.
at the end of the night.
Right.
The crowd was really appreciative of Edge. And, you know, we're all huge fans of his here, and he's at the top of his game now. I was hoping for booing and throwing stuff at Cena.
Right.
Just to be Toronto.
You know, I have to hand it to them that they really booked it. They really booked it smart by keeping Cena so strong, and especially that spectacular finish of the FU off the ladder through the through tables. They really did. They really did make it work for them.
It was a nice way of doing it, too, because, you know, normally you wouldn't think that Cena would ever switch to SmackDown. But even the smarts out there that, you know, the peeps on the websites and stuff,
they were thinking that
CW's debuting this week.
That's
you
right.
need a star over
yep.
there.
Yep.
So there was a definite possibility of moving Cena over to SmackDown in order to, you know, have the big star there to get bigger ratings on SmackDown, make the network happy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. How about the cage match, the big Hell in the Cell?
You know, the cage was, now I had people.
It's bigger, it's much bigger
well,
now.
Yeah, because I had people text messaging me asking, how big is this cage? Is it bigger or is it just what it looks like on TV? So it was bigger, is that what we've determined?
They talked about it in the commentary, bigger, yes. Yeah. I think that was so that, honestly, they made it so big so no one would climb up there
and try a
spectacular spot.
I thought that just meant that someone was going to go up there and jump off the top of the cage because it was, you know, Shane's going to take a jump to, you know, outdo Foley.
It was a pretty tall cage.
It was huge. It was enormous.
Tall, yeah.
And it was cool seeing it live. I don't like watching cage matches live, though, because you got to stare through the cage the whole time.
Then you didn't get to see Big Show's big butt there or what?
And I'm okay with that. Having said that, there were the monitors. I have to say, though, the spot of the night, we only got a minute left here. Trish Stratus putting Lita into the sharpshooter. Yeah. Even I got into it. And
right.
I said, normally I go to events, I kind of sit there quietly. I stood up. And I popped when she spread the legs apart. I went, "Oh my god!"
Everybody knew
the
sharpshooter's
coming.
Yeah.
And then Lita climbed to the ropes. I'm like, "Pull her back! Pull her back!" She pulled her right back in. I so marked out for that. There was no better way of finishing that match.
It was.
I got the Pringles.
Yeah,
I got head to toe.
It's one thing that we gotta give it to Trish is that she got out and she got out in an incredibly respectful way. She got to have a proper retirement match. She got to have a big pop finish retirement match.
Yeah.
She got to do it in her hometown.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how often this never, never happens. So, it was obvious that the fans were huge on that one as well. So overall, a pretty hot crowd there.
It was a hot crowd right from the very beginning. I was walking out. I saw a lot of peeps from O'Grady's.
Yeah.
Double thumbs up from everybody down there.
All right.
Double thumbs up.
And from there, we had Trish Stratus on the Law live that night, just about an hour and a half after her match with Lita. So here's Trish Stratus from the night of September the 17th, 2006, on Live Audio Wrestling.
She's probably one of the most popular divas in WWE history. She had already conquered the fitness world when she grew interested in wrestling. She was a one-time co-host of this very program before being signed by the WWE. And there's no doubt that very first night on Raw, she was nervous. She was really scared, but she went on, she blew us all away, became a fine performer both in the ring and on the mic. She wrapped up her career tonight at Unforgiven. Trish, how are you?
Oh, I am fantastic. I'm on cloud nine, man. I feel great.
You must, just quickly, what's going through your mind right now? The last few days must have been like emotional roller coaster.
Oh, it's been nuts. It's been everything from, you know, happy, sad, anxious, excited, like everything. And I just literally took all that emotion. And oh my God, like I'm standing at the curtain and there's thank you, Trish chant. And I was like, oh my God, I just like almost lost it, but I used it to like channel my energy. And God, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And everyone keeps saying to me, like, aren't you sad? I'm like, no, I am so happy. How can you not be excited and so happy from after a moment like that?
Well, that's the thing, Trish. How many wrestling stars, period, get to go out in such a classy style with the belt in their own hometown as well?
Like, God, can you write a better ending, right?
You had it. You had it. And the sharpshooter. Whose idea was the sharpshooter?
That was mine. Oh, my God. I just had to. And it's so funny because I got, like, a lot of people kind of, I was like, oh, yeah, that'll be it. People were like, what? Why would you? I'm like, you got to be Canadian to get it.
Oh, that's so amazing. Now, just so the fans hear it from you, Trish, and so you can get the straight picture, why did you make this decision at this time? Why are you moving away from pro wrestling?
It was just, you know, my contract came up at the beginning of September, and I always feel like everything I've done so far has been like right place, right time. And, you know, my contract was up beginning of September. Unforgiven was the middle of September. I'm getting married at the end of September. And it just felt like this was the time. It's just right, you know, like to sit down and like, okay, we want to sign you for another 3 to 5 years. And I was like, let's think about where I'm at in my life and what I've done so far. And, And it's crazy, actually, the package they played, you know, I said a clip, which I don't even know when I said that, but it said, "Legends always leave on top." I was like, well, kind of cool. You know, I was like, it was just the right time, and I felt it. And I haven't looked back, like, or regretted my moment, and it's been, like, such a fantastic send-off, and I'm happy. I'm so happy right now.
Was it even slightly motivated by the fact that in terms of actually having a women's wrestling division, it seems to be something they're trying to kind of move away from? I mean, now that you won the title, I have a feeling that they'll probably just put the title aside.
I really don't know what they're going to do, but I'm tell you what, though, I just snuck that baby out with my bag. I'm like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, what's going on the mantelpiece, baby?
They call me back. I'm like, oh, not returning calls, sorry. I don't know what they're going to do, and I just, you know, I mean, I could, everything I've asked for in my career, I mean, it's like not only working people, like, if you go way back, I mean, starting off with Vince, you know, and then working, like, tagging with someone like The Rock and then Bubba Dudley, like, there's so many neat things that sort of molded me into who I am today. And then when I was able to be my own, like, my own entity out there, I mean, every woman who's come through, I've worked with all of them, and I've had such amazing, I've learned so much from each one of them, mm-hmm. and collectively, it's added up to, like, where I am today kind of thing.
Yeah, well, do you remember that very first night you were on Raw and how scared you were?
Yes, thank you for reminding me. You know what's crazy? I thought about, like, I made my debut in Long Island, New York, and I finished off at Madison Square Garden for my first and last Raw. It was pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was pretty scared back then.
But you stuck to your guns while so many others would have fallen to the wayside. You stuck to your guns. You did the manager thing for a little while with TNA. Mm-hmm. And then you just learned how to work properly, and mm-hmm. there you are. Like, I mean, honestly, I'm sure you'll be remembered as one of the top divas in WWE history.
I hope so, man. I really have worked my ass off to try to have that legacy. I want, you know, and that's why, like, I didn't do things like, play, you know, post for Playboy and stuff, because I want people to remember that very thing that I do in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, hopefully that's how they'll remember me.
Now, when you look back on the career yourself, how does it feel to be walking away from it? Because you really did enjoy it so much. And how do you think you'll get remembered by wrestling fans?
Oh, man, I always talk about this unique experience of, like, growing with the fans. Like, they saw me literally with two left feet in the ring and then getting a little better. And, oh, you know, that's a pretty solid clothesline she gave for once. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then so I had that unique experience of, like, growing in front of the fans' eyes. And I think that's why they kind of got with me and stuck with me for so long. And every time I went out there, I was trying to just prove to them and to, like, my coworkers watching that, like, I belonged in the ring, you know. And I just hope that they'll know that I tried give 110% every time I was out there, you know, and I wanted their respect and their admiration so bad, and that's all I strive for when I went out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you had to sit down, you know, now and look over the past 7 years, what stands out for you? What highlights, whether in-ring, out-of-ring, what stuff sticks with you?
You know, I don't know why, but for some reason when I was out there tonight, I went, I can't believe they're so excited for me as a girl. Like, I know it sounds crazy, but I felt like as respected as a male, you know, wrestler, and I thought that was pretty amazing, you know.
Sure.
What I'm happy about is that they've given me the respect as a, you know, wrestler, period. Not necessarily just a, you know, a woman in the ring, and that's meant so much to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you see it going now that you're kind of stepping away from it? Because myself, I kind of get this bad feeling that the women's division is going to get somewhat abolished. Do you see it continuing, or do you see this kind of maybe being the end of the road for the women's division as well as your career?
I mean, what can they do without Trish Stratus?
Well, you know, you might be joking, but that's a great point, because when it comes to workers, there's two or three of you tops that can work now, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know, you know, Mickie James has a lot of potential, and, I don't know. You know what? Put it this way. Years ago, you said, well, look at the women's division. Who we got? We got Trish Stratus. She's kind of this, you know, valet, and who knows? Maybe someone's going to step up to the plate now.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just a matter of, you know, the kind of, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's like, it wasn't just me. It was the opportunity that I was given and the people I worked with. So it's going to be an interesting landscape that they have to really start to focus on, really, too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, we have the big wedding coming up at the end of this month. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I would suspect a nice, long, suspended honeymoon, relax, oh, yeah. Take it easy.
Oh, my God. I'm going to Europe, and I'm going to see everything that I got to visit. But, like, oh, saw the arena, the airport. I'm so excited.
Right. So what are the plans after that, besides, obviously, a well-deserved vacation and some R&R time? What's going to be the plan for Trish?
Well, I'm probably going to alphabetize my DVDs, learn to bake a souffle. Ooh. I'm going to be popping in. I'm going to co-host a couple of shows with you guys.
Hey,
it's like it was a lease to the WWE for all these years. Now we get you back.
Yeah, exactly. You can come home.
Full circle. It's awesome. Yes. I'll be like, sweet. Look, guys, they made fresh brownies. Yeah.
Now that will be awesome. I look forward to that.
Let's do it. We'll do it in the near future. I'll come and co-host a show with you guys.
Awesome.
That would be awesome. Well, Trish, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I know that you got a million things to do. Go shoot the DVD extras and all that kind of stuff now. But I want to thank you so much. We always had faith in you right from the very beginning. And we're all of us are particularly proud here at The Law to see how far you did go in that 7-year period.
Thank you. And on to you guys. I mean, it was a great opportunity for me to come on that show like 8 years ago and talk wrestling and, you know, be a cool chick who knows wrestling. You know? So thanks for that opportunity as well. And, you know, coming full circle, I started off with you guys and here we go. Good night, guys.
All right. All right, Trish, you take care of yourself and enjoy that honeymoon.
Thank you. I got the belt. I'm running.
Yeah, take it. Vince can make another one. Take it.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The one and only Trish Stratus. She wraps up her career tonight at the WWE's Unforgiven pay-per-view right here in Toronto, her own hometown. That would be great if she gets to keep the belt, too.
It would be. She could bring it in
awesome.
Here. Yeah,
bring the belt in with you.
She had a lot of family support out there tonight. Uh-huh. Where I was sitting, the entire row in front of me was all Trish Stratus family.
Oh, very nice.
That's why that moment when she did throw the sharpshooter on was extra cool, and I'm sitting there watching her whole family go nuts in front of me.
And that is going to cap off our review of 2006's Unforgiven pay-per-view. And the streak continued with Trish Stratus, undefeated at Unforgiven, as she went out. Not her final WWE match, but was her final Unforgiven match.
Yeah.
The end of an era. Yeah. So let's wrap this up, boy. Looking ahead to next week, you have the pick for what we are going to review and how do we follow up 2006's Unforgiven pay-per-view.
Well, sadly, we are approaching the end of August.
Yes.
And that means the end of summer.
It is the end of summer.
What better way to go out than an episode of Baywatch?
Oh, no.
Baywatch, Bash at the Beach, Season 6, Episode 15, featuring Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Randy Savage, and Baywatch.
Of course. I think Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan's on there.
Is that right?
All right. We are going to review an episode of Baywatch next week. The wrestling version. So that's going to be coming up next week. Thanks to everyone for joining us. You can always catch all your news at liveaudiowrestling.com. We do this podcast every Wednesday up at the site, and you can subscribe for free to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes, as well as our other shows, The Law, Review a Raw, Review an Impact. Plus, we've got a big 25-minute interview up with Chris Jericho this week. Tons of stuff. So much stuff to listen to, eh? You need to make time just to catch it all.
Is that a good thing?
Of course it is. It's an on-demand service way. You demand it, and we provide it.
Okay.
All right. That's all for us this week, everyone. Thanks a lot for joining us. Give Way a follow at Way0937, at Law Radio, and our contest for this Sunday to win two tickets to watch the SmackDown House Show in Hamilton with the entire Law crew, including Way. Simply tout us using the hashtag LawRadio. Why you want these tickets to go watch the SmackDown House Show in Hamilton, and the best ones will be run on Sunday night's edition of The Law, and then we will pick a winner, and you will have two tickets to not only go to the buffet at Gibson's Lounge at the Cops Coliseum in Hamilton, but then get to watch the whole house show with us. What a fun event.
Is that really such a draw?
You are a huge draw, Way. We're depending on it. So go tout right now. Use the hashtag Law Radio. It's a free app. You can delete it after if you're not down with Tout, but at least download it, send a video out, and then you can say you've used Tout in your life, and maybe you'll be on The Law this Sunday. So that is all for us, everybody. We will chat with you guys later on this week, and thanks for listening to Review Away.
Boom.
Perfect timing.
What about the music?
10 minutes. A what?
Song.
shit. I always forget this. But we also have to go out with a song. And what should we go out with, Way? Something that really sums up Unforgiven 2006. And yes, it's remembered as a very classic pay-per-view, but listening to all the feedback, Way, there was a visual from the Hell in a Cell that everyone remembers too. So I'm going to go back to right around this time period. It was, I believe, 2005. And Eminem's probably least remembered single, Ass Like That.
Oh, okay.
In honor of the Big Show and his bare ass being shown on pay-per-view for a way too lengthy period of time.
Shake it, I can't believe it. I ain't never seen a ass like that. The way you move it, you make my slinky go doing, doing, doing. Just like a Simpson, looks so tempting. Nick, I ain't never seen a ass like that. Every time I see that show on MTV, my slinky goes doing, doing, doing. Mary Kate and Ashley used to be so wholesome. Now they're getting older, they're starting to grow bum bums. I go to the movies and sit down with my popcorn. Bully sing, freeze. Doing, doing, doing. What do you mean, freeze? Jeez, I just got my seat. I have ticket. Look, I put it away, my zipper sheep. Please do not remove me from this movie theater, please. I did not even get to see Mary Kate shower scene. I didn't mean to be obscene or make a great big scene. And don't treat me like I'm Pee Wee Herman. This movie's PG. I demand to see my attorney. I will simply plead innocent, culpably, and be free. Free, yes, free, right back on the streets. What do you mean, my lawyers, with Michael, he's too busy. I am Triumph. Britney Spears has shoulders like a man. And I can say that, then you'll laugh, cause there is a puppet on my hand. The way you shake it, I can't believe it. I ain't never seen a ass like that. The way you move it, you make my slinky go doing, doing, doing. Hillary Duff is not quite old enough, so I ain't never seen a boy like that. Maybe next year I'll say ass and she'll make my slinky go doing, doing, doing. The way she moves, she dances like a go-go. In that video she sings, get out your bozo. I need a new boyfriend, hi, my name is Jojo. Holy Sam, freeze, doing, doing, doing. What do you mean, freeze? My computers will be seized and my keys to my ranch. I just make cookies, Mr. Officer. Take a whiff of these. Here, I make Jesus juice. Take a sip of these. Nobody is safe from me. No, not even me. I don't even know if I can say the word PPP on the radio, but I think I did. Janet, is that the best? I think I decide. Psych, I joke, I kid. I don't think my joke is working. I must flee quick into the chopper. Everybody get out. I am not trying. I am Arnold. Get down. The way you shake it, I can't believe it. I ain't never seen a ass like that. The way you move it, you make my slinky go doing, doing, doing. So Gwen Stefani, will you f*** on me, please? I ain't never seen a ass like that. Cause the way you move it, you make my slinky go doing, doing, doing.